that's coming through a hole in the air from those gnats in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the feel that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
Oh, my dear ship of steel.
I mean. I love the country, but I can't stand the scene. And I'm neither left or right, I'm just staying home tonight, getting lost in that hopeless little screen. But I'm stubborn as those garbage bags of time cannot decay. I'm junk, but I'm still holding up this little wild bouquet. Democracy is coming to the USA.
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Axis Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. If you're just tuning in, we're listening to The Myth of the Good Wars with Howard Zinn.
So in asking who gains from the war, well, I have to rule out black people as gaining from the Revolutionary War. What about, now here's a group that we don't even think about in relation to the Revolutionary War. Indians. Native Americans, they're here, they live here, they're on this continent, right? Our roads in Cape Cod are named after them, right? It's their land. We Europeans have come in and gradually encroached on their land, killing them if they get in the way. Did Indians gain from the Revolutionary War? Did their situation, what was their situation? It was a tremulous one because, you know, they're these colonists on the East Coast, and the colonists want to go westward into Indian territory, and so there's a lot of tension there. And so what do Indians gain from our independence from England? Not only do they gain nothing, it's worse for them, because before the Revolution, before the Revolutionary War, the British have set a line to the west of the colonies, roughly along the Appalachians, but they've set a line in 1763. It's called the Proclamation of 1763, and they've said colonists cannot go beyond this line, because beyond this line, that's Indian territory. You know, it's not that the British were feeling kindly towards the Indians. They didn't want trouble, right? So it's, no, stay behind this line, and don't go into Indian territory. What happens when we win the Revolution? We wipe out that line. No more barrier. Now we can move westward, and we do. And in fact, the next 100 years consists of our taking over the rest of the continent, and in the process, massacring our Indian tribes, driving them into a smaller and smaller part of the continent. No, Indians are not gaining from the Revolutionary War. These are people, aren't they? They're just like white colonists who can celebrate independence. Black people are people. Indians are people. Shouldn't they be considered when you count up the cost and when you look at the balance sheet? Working people. Poor people. Were poor people the beneficiaries of the Revolutionary War? Well, did poor people rush to join Washington's army? No, they did not. There had to be conscription. And the rich could get out of conscription by paying a certain sum of money. This was a precedent which was set and which was then followed in the Civil War. Poor white people were not anxious to join the army. However, they were made promises. Oh, we'll give you some land. It's like, we'll give you a GI Bill of Rights. We'll give you some land. Your status will go up. Not only that, in the army, if you're in the army, you'll get paid, and your life now is not that great. Well, you know, the usual situation. You join the military, and if your life up to this point has not been a very satisfying one, been a young guy and you don't know what your future brings, yeah, join the military. You'll get a uniform, you'll get a gun, you'll get some status, you might win some medals. If you stay alive and come out of the war intact, you get a little land. Wasn't it? So poor people did not simply flock to the revolutionary banner, thinking that, oh, this is a war for us. They had very personal reasons, and many of them did not join. And when they did join the army, Washington's army, and they discovered that they were not being treated well, they discovered that the officers in the army, who came mostly from the upper classes, the officers in the army were getting fine clothes and shoes and good food, and they were getting salaries that were being paid. The GIs were not getting good clothes, not getting shoes, not getting good food, not getting paid. As a result, there were mutinies in the Revolutionary Army. Now, how many of you who have studied American history in school learned that there were mutinies in the Revolutionary Army? I would guess not many. I went all through, right, the education of a historian, right up to the PhD, how proud I am. All through the education of a historian, did I ever learn that there were mutinies in the Revolutionary Army? Not at all. Not a word. But there were. Thousands of soldiers mutinied, thousands. It was serious. Washington had to deal with it. And there were too many to suppress, so he made concessions in order to appease them and stop the mutiny. That was the mutiny of the Pennsylvania Line, as it was called. Shortly after that, the concessions were made, many of which were not followed through on, as usually happens when promises are made and they're not fulfilled. But shortly after the mutiny in the Pennsylvania Line, there was a mutiny in the New Jersey Line, a smaller mutiny, not thousands, hundreds. Washington said, well, we can deal with this. We don't have to make concessions here. We will execute the leaders of this mutiny. And Washington ordered the execution of the leaders of the mutiny. They were taken out and shot, and their fellow mutineers were given orders to shoot them. Don't learn about this. All of this is to say that the Revolutionary War, like all wars, was a class war. You're not supposed to say things like that. You're not supposed to bring up the issue of class when you're dealing with war. War, we're all in it together. We're all one class. We're all in one patriotic body. No. Wars affect different classes differently. Wars affect the rich and the poor differently. The benefits are not allocated equally to rich and poor from a war that's won. And in fact, when these working people, farmers, come back from the war to take up their little plots of land which are given to them, what do they find? They find that they're being treated like heroes and they're being thanked for the service they gave in the Revolutionary War? Hardly. Now they're going to be taxed on that land. Taxed in such a way that they can't even pay those taxes. And then when they can't pay the taxes, their land, their farms, their livestock are going to be taken away from them. That's what leads to Shays' Rebellion. Right? That's something people learn about, right? Especially in Massachusetts, I think. At least they learn that it's something on a multiple choice test. Shays' Rebellion, oh yeah. Shays' Rebellion was serious. Shays' Rebellion, with thousands of farmers in those towns in western Massachusetts surrounding the courthouses, not allowing the auctions to go on. And an army had to be brought out to suppress them, an army financed by the rich merchants of Boston. It was crushed. But it was a sign, and for us looking at, a sign to us of, hey, what was this war fought for, and for whom was it fought, and who benefited from it, and who was betrayed by it? Working people were betrayed. And they'd seen their brothers and friends die in that war. Now they were being betrayed.
Here are great speeches and interviews at Access Sacramento every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. or go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
How you doing? Having a good time so far? I got a little story for you. A congressman from Florida sent notes to a page. Things soon got much horrider, 'cause the page was underage. And we're singing, hang down your head, Mark Foley, hang down your head and cry. You once appeared so holy, now the right has a big black eye. They should have seen the clues last winter. Hastert didn't try. Though once at a Chinese dinner, you ordered some young guy. Well, this has been the worst time. You knew that you were beat. Though it doesn't seem like the first time that you gave up your seat. And we're singing, hang down your head, Mark Foley, hang down your head and cry. Once you appeared so holy, now the right has a big black eye. You really weren't at all smart, and some pundits even scoff. So you went down to Walmart, cause boys' pants were half off. And singing, hang down your head, Mark Foley, hang down your head and cry. Once you appeared so holy, now the right has a big black eye. Well, it seems you're out of a job, Mr. Foley, but we think we've thought of a brand new position for you. No, I don't mean that either. Though you're a transgressor, if you hold your tongue, you could be a professor at a school called Brigham Young. Thank you now. Good.
And now, back to Howard Zinn and the Myth of the Good Wars.
The Chaz Rebellion takes place in 1786. Many of you know the date 1787, because that's the date of the Constitutional Convention. That's the date when the 55 men gather in Philadelphia, mostly rich white men, really, gather a representative group, you might say, as representative as our Congress and Senate are today. Yeah. 1987, they gather in Philadelphia and they draw up a constitution. Why do they draw up a constitution? Well, I know what I learned in school, and I'll bet they're still teaching in school. We had a weak central government. We needed a strong central government, so we had a constitution. We created a constitution to give us a strong central government. We can be proud, because we want our government to be strong. Well, yes, there's some truth to that. Well, it's true that a strong central government was set up. For what reason? Well, if you want to know the reason for the strong central government being set up, look at the correspondence that went back and forth among the founding fathers after Shays' Rebellion. Shays' Rebellion worried them. It was not only taking place in Massachusetts, although we in Massachusetts, we learn about Shays' Rebellion. There were similar rebellions in other states of farmers. The founding fathers were worried about that. One of them, General Henry Knox of Massachusetts, I'm always proud of people from Massachusetts, especially if they're generals. And Henry Knox, who one of Washington's colleagues in the army, after Shays' Rebellion, he wrote to Washington, and he said something like this. I can't actually reproduce his elegant language. You know, these founding fathers, they spoke, wrote very elegantly. You compare, really, whatever you can say about them, they knew how to use the English language. Compare them to our congressmen and senators today. really. But so Knox writes to George Washington after Shays' Rebellion, and he says, and I'll paraphrase in our own crude 21st century language, he says, you know, these people, there was these people, these people who fought in the Revolution, they think that because we won the war that they are entitled to an equal share of the wealth of this country. No. The Constitutional Convention is convened in the shadow of Shays' Rebellion and with the fear of future rebellions. A strong central government was set up not just because, oh, it's nice to have a strong central government. The strong central government was set up so you could have a government strong enough to suppress rebellion, to suppress working class rebellions, to suppress slave rebellions, to protect settlers and expansionists who move into Indian territory, a government that can raise an army. Yeah, so, you know, before you simply rush, say, wow, how good to have a strong central government. Strong for what? For what reason was that strength created? So, I introduce these elements that we don't usually think about when we think about the Revolutionary War, rah-rah, Bunker Hill, just to make us think more complicated ways about so-called good wars and to ask who benefits from them and who doesn't benefit from them and what is the cost to human cost of the war. Yeah, let's take all of this into consideration and let's put that on the balance sheet. Yes, and let's acknowledge on the good side of that. Yeah, we win independence from England. Okay, but let's have an honest look at that balance sheet and then ask, should we have fought a war for that, given what we know about the results of the war, the benefits of the war, the class character of the war, the casualties of the war? Well, of course, the question comes up, yeah, but don't you want us to have independence from England? Well, that raises another question, a question that can be raised about all the good wars, and it will come up. If it doesn't come up, I'll bring it up. And that is, could we have put something good on the positive side of the balance sheet without that human cost? In other words, could we have won independence from England in a different way? We generally don't think of that. That is, when you have fought a war and you've won something, independence from England, end of slavery, Hitler defeated, when you've fought a war and you've seen certain results, it embeds in you the idea that this was the only way it could have done. This very important thing to think about, and that is that if something has happened in history, if a certain scenario has unfolded in a certain way in history, we assume that that's the only way it could have unfolded. Because if we did assume that, we'd have to use our imagination. We'd have to use our imagination and try to imagine something that didn't happen. If something happened, it has a reality, has a strength. If something didn't happen, if it's only a possibility, well, then we have to use our imagination. We have to use our imagination. Could independence from England have been won without that human cost and with different kind of results for different classes of people? Is that possible? It's worth thinking about. Didn't Canada get independence from England? Pretty much, right? Did they fight a bloody Revolutionary War? Oh. Granted, every situation is different and can't simply plaster one, but still, it's worth thinking about. Is it possible that the struggle against England could have gone on in different ways without Valley Forge and without Bunker Hill and without the Battle of Saratoga and without 2.5 million people dead? I insist on using that figure to bring us closer to reality. Is it possible that might have won independence some other way? Have to use our imagination. That's hard. Have to imagine something that didn't happen as opposed to accepting something that did happen. But I insist we have to do that. Otherwise, we're going to be stuck. Otherwise, we're going to be stuck with history. Otherwise, we're going to be stuck with doing the same thing over and over again because this is the only way it can be done.
Beneath the Nashville skyline, there on Music Row, songwriters churn out lyrics behind the laptop's glow. Country stars go shopping, looking for the perfect fit. A&R men roam the streets, looking for another hit. Well, just a couple hours drive and 100 light years from the city, they're blowing up the hills of Tennessee. The scope of devastation is a challenge to compare. If you've been to Hiroshima, then perhaps you're almost there. 'Cause that's how much dynamite is used up every week to make barren wasteland from what was once a mountain peak, where all the watersheds and rivers and forests used to be. They're blowing up the hills of Tennessee. They used to have miners send them underground, but people are expensive, so they found a way around. Just bomb the hills to hell and buy off the EPA. With 10% the workforce and 20 times the pay, do it in the name of God and private property. They're blowing up the hills of Tennessee. Like an invisible tsunami, man-made and hidden from our eyes, where every living thing is killed, and the rest of it just dies for a 4-inch seam of coal. They'll just wipe out life on Earth. Look on the New York Stock Exchange to see how much it's worth. Sam won't be making moonshine, no more banjo on his knee. They're blowing up the hills of Tennessee. Back in Nashville, the cancer wards are filling up. They've got to filter the water before they can put it in a cup. Can't go vacation on Blair Mountain, not here in real life. It's only good for songs now, no place to take the wife, 'cause there's nothing left there but mudslides and misery. They're blowing up the hills of Tennessee. They're blowing up the hills of Tennessee.
And now, messages from Access Sacramento.